Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Katie Weaver Show. This is Katie. I'm your host. I'm so happy to be here. If you are listening live, it is February 6th at about 11 a.m. Pacific time. If you're listening to an archive or a replay, I also want to welcome you to the show. I want to let you know I'm over in the chat room. You can find that by heading over to 12radio.com. Click on the chat button, and you'll be redirected into the Facebook chat. You'll see my banner right there at the top of the page. I do keep an eye on that chat, so if you are commenting there, I will see it and interact with you. I am also live streaming this event from Facebook and YouTube. If you'd rather watch than listen, that is Katie Weaver Domestic Mystic on YouTube or on Facebook, so you can find it either way. And I have my eyes on the chat there as well, so I promise I will see you. And if you're a spammer, I'll see you too. Oh my gosh, you guys. All right, this is more true crime related than my show, but I'm going to talk about this for a few minutes because it's really precedent setting, interesting stuff. A couple of years ago, there was a school shooting in Michigan, not too far from Detroit. And it was a 15-year-old boy named Ethan Crumley. Ethan injured seven and killed four. And after Ethan was taken into custody, a lot of information started to flow out about the whole situation and about his family. And in the meantime, his parents drained their bank account and his to the tune of about $3,000 from him and tried to flee. And they were wanted for questioning because there was some serious questions about their culpability with the gun that he used. And they were found by a SWAT force hiding in the basement of a warehouse type building in Detroit and taken into custody. And they were charged, both of them, with 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter. They have been fighting these charges for 2 years. They fought them all the way to the Michigan Supreme Court, where they lost their appeals. And so this went to trial finally. At some point along the way, mom and dad kind of turned on each other, so their cases were split. So mom went first. Her trial's been going on the last few weeks. And what we've learned, a lot of things we already knew from the arrest warrants, but is essentially this little boy had been screaming out to his parents for help for a good year about his mental health. We know that because of things that were written in his journal, because of texts that he sent to friends, because of pictures that he drew, and texts that he sent to his parents. He was hallucinating. He was terrified. He was home alone all the time. And in all the while that he was asking them to get him help, he was told to suck it up. Mom shared a few of her Xannies with him a few times. So she was getting mental health care. But they didn't do a thing for Ethan. Not a thing. What they did do is buy him a handgun for Christmas that year. They bought it on Black Friday. Over the weekend, Mom took him to the shooting range and taught him how to use it. On Monday, she got an email from a teacher concerned because he was acting weird, and she caught him researching bullets online on his phone during class. His mom texted him and said, "You're not in trouble. You just need to learn how to not get caught, LOL." Very funny, Jennifer. The next day, he went to school and was acting really, really weird. And a teacher caught him drawing a picture, kind of a cartoon-style picture, of a school shooting. It said, "Help me. Blood everywhere. I can't make it stop." So they called his parents. And his parents came and they sat down in the counselor's office. They were there for about, 8 to 12 minutes was the determination. The school gave them the option, it's probably time to take Ethan home and get him into some treatment. Mom admitted that they gave her the picture, but she didn't look at it till later, after the shooting. Neither the school nor the parents thought to search Ethan's backpack. And the parents wanted to get back to school, so they didn't take him home. They decided not to worry about it. And just a couple hours later, Mom and Dad got word that there was a school shooting going on at Ethan's school. The first thing they did? Well, race home and look for that gun, because they knew damn well who was doing it. And of course, the gun wasn't there. Mom texted Ethan, "Ethan, don't do it." Well, it was too late. Ethan was already in police custody at that point. And that's when they decided they better get the hell out of Dodge and drained their bank accounts and tried to run. They immediately refused to pay for his legal bills, and he became a ward of the state with a couple of public defenders. There wasn't a juvie in the state that would take him, so he lived in solitary confinement in the jail. Incidentally, the same jail where his parents were, though he would have never known that or seen them, because nobody wanted him, because this kid was terrifying. And they wanted to make sure they could keep their other the kids in the other, you know, in juvies safe. So that's what happened. When we got to trial, we learned a lot of things about Jennifer. That Jennifer worked full time. Jennifer was having an active affair and was also a swinger. Jennifer, which doesn't make her a criminal, but Jennifer also was on the ski patrol and was gone for 10 hours a week every Saturday on ski patrol. So she worked 5 days a week, was on ski patrol. She also had horses at a stable that she spent several hours a week with, and $20,000 a year on. Jennifer had absolutely no time to be a parent. She wasn't parenting Ethan at all. Ethan was a very sad and lonely boy who was spending all of his time alone. At the time of the shootings, his dog had recently died, and his only friend in the world had been sent by his parents away to a mental health care facility because of his OCD and other mental health issues. Ethan was completely failed. Completely failed. And that's why the prosecutor said, you know what? We're charging the parents. They have completely failed this kid. And then they put a loaded gun in his hands. And the results were horrific. So it's a precedent-setting case, because what do we do in all of these school shootings? And we wring our hands and we say, what can we do? And it becomes this big political issue, and the gun control people or the 2A people start butting heads instantly, and nothing ever fucking happens except for another school shooting. So in this instance, the prosecutor said, no, this was egregious on the parents' part, and we're not going to let them get away with it. Well, there have been a lot of people saying all along, there's no way, they can't meet the burden of proof, they didn't actively do anything, it's not their fault. And the trial was pretty wild. Jennifer's attorney is a woman named Shannon Smith. And Shannon is easily the most bizarre, inappropriate, and unprofessional attorney I have ever seen in open court. And I've sat through the Daybell trial, most of it. We're not quite done yet. But crazy stuff. And crazy stuff from sobbing loudly during videos of Ethan shooting kids. Crazy stuff like making a joke about wanting to kill herself when her computer didn't respond to her correctly. Crazy stuff like laughing and making jokes about Jennifer being off on business trips swinging while Ethan was at home suffering. Doing things like right in the middle of open court, taking off her suit coat jacket to freshen up and brush out her hair and put on makeup. Strange, like complaining to the judge about how hungry she was and the judge trying to feed her. I have bagels. I have bagels in my office. Oh, no, I can't eat bagels. Oh, I can't. I can't. I can only have things I can. I only can have soup. I can't swallow anything else. Oh, I might have some soup. No. It's okay. I'll send my assistant out. Who does that with the judge? I've never seen a judge that would play like that, to be honest. So many wild things in this case. Down to the closing, where Shannon Smith spoke for an hour and 45 minutes about what a terrible parent she is, trying to make a point that raising teenagers is really hard. We're all doing the best we can. Hey, if I like to cook, if one of my kids took a butcher knife out of the butcher block and murdered someone, would I be liable because they used my knife? Hey, I own my kids' cell phones. If my son sends a dick pic to somebody, does that mean that I would be held liable for child pornography? You know, a lot of not apples to apples kinds of arguments. But she went on for over an hour about her own kids, about essentially proving the point about what a crappy parent she is, and about how unhappy her kids are, and essentially about how neglectful she is to her own kids, trying to prove a point to the jury, trying to relate to them, apparently. I was very nervous, to be honest, that this jury was going to hang because they didn't come back yesterday. They deliberated all day. They asked a couple of questions that made me a little nervous. And I was kind of expecting today that I didn't think we'd get a not guilty, but I thought we might get a hung jury. But no, we didn't. They came back this morning, just about a half an hour ago, with a guilty on all charges verdict. Now, Dad is up next. His trial will start in the next week or two, and Jennifer will be sentenced in April. Why does it matter? Why am I talking about a true crime case on this show? Well, because it really matters. Because we aren't going to get legislation at this point that helps with gun violence. We're apparently not. If we didn't do it when a classroom full of kindergartners was gunned down, we're sure as hell not going to do it now. What we are going to do, apparently, is have prosecutors that are brave enough, when the situation calls for it, to charge the person who bought the gun. I don't think that every parent of every school shooter should be held accountable. I don't think that's how this should work. I don't believe that's true. But I do think on an individual basis, when a minor has weapons, the first thing we should be asking is, where did they come from? And how did they get them? Ethan, by the way, pled guilty. And in his sentencing hearing, said on the stand that the gun was not locked up and was easily found in his dad's nightstand where he knew it was being kept. Do you guys know how easy it is to secure a gun? A handgun just requires a case. Those cases are less than $100, a whole lot less expensive than the gun. You can get trigger locks for these guns that are fingerprint scanners, so that only you could get a trigger lock off that gun. Nobody else. If you can afford to buy guns, can't you afford to keep them safe? I don't understand this. A lot of 2A people have been watching this case and pounding their chests and flailing their fists, and they will continue to, and this case will be appealed and appealed and appealed into infinitum. But what we heard from that jury, and the jury, by the way, was 6 men and 6 women, and most of them were gun owners. They weren't people who just stand firmly against guns, not at all. But what they heard was a very sad and disturbing story about a very disturbed little boy who did not get the care from his parents that he needed to have. And then they put a loaded gun in his hands. That's what they heard, because that's what happened. It'll be very interesting to see what happens with Dad's case. I don't know. He had his own reasons for being neglectful and never home. But for now, this is the precedent that has been set. Now, does it mean that every time a kid shoots somebody, their parents are going to be charged? Not at all. This took a very specific prosecutor and a very specific set of circumstances to make this happen. But it does start to lay some groundwork. That if you purchase firearms and you store them in your home and they are not secured, and a minor child gets a hold of that firearm and commits a crime, or perhaps an accident, you will be held liable and responsible, not just financially, but perhaps criminally as well. I think this is a way for us to start moving forward with keeping kids safer from guns. It's a long game, unfortunately, but it's something. So I'm sharing it with you guys because I think we should all know about this case and the precedent that it is setting. It's an interesting one. It's a very, very important one. So here we are. Well, hi, guys. Not what I was here to talk about, but this literally just happened and it's all that's in my head. And I'm really, really glad to see it. So we'll see. Jennifer could be sentenced to up to 60 years in prison. She won't be. This was her first offense. She's already done 2 years. I would imagine she gets somewhere around 12 months or 12 years, sorry, something like that. I mean, Ethan's in prison forever. That's a done deal. No, Tay, you did not. I was thinking about it. Sometimes I feel like there's cases that are worth sharing with you guys because for safety reasons or because of things just like this. These are important things for us to know about. And I hope that the families of all of the victims felt today like some justice was served. As it was. Yep. You know, Sid, it's a really interesting point. She said there's likely a generational lineage that created them. I have had the exact same thought. I've been wondered a lot as I listened to this, as I watched a very not contrite Jennifer Crumbly on the stand. Very unnurturing. Didn't seem to really care about Ethan very much. Mom, I wondered, who is this person? Who raised her? Who raised her? She had told friends that Ethan was an oopsie baby. He was her only one. And he seemed to be very unwanted by his parents. But I had the same thought, and I think you're very right. You're absolutely right about that. Who the hell raised Jennifer Crumbly? Why? Who didn't nurture her and teach her how to be a parent? One of the things the lawyer said that really bothered me, she said, I have four teenagers. I don't check their phones. Well, first of all, Shannon, that's really negligent on your part. Second of all, you just told the whole world that you don't check your children's phones. I really, really hope that that was just performative and not true, because you just told a whole world full of pedophiles that your kids are easy targets because you are not paying attention. Really, really frustrating. Yeah, Tay, I'd be interested to know what her actual diagnoses are, because that lack of remorse was pretty jarring. The prosecution asked her if she would have, what she would do differently. And that bitch said nothing. She said, I wouldn't do anything differently. She wouldn't do anything differently. She wouldn't try to help her poor little kid. I'm so sad for Ethan. Ethan's terrifying and Ethan needs to be where he's at. But I'm so sad for Ethan. I can't imagine how many scary, lonely nights. There were texts of him texting her many, many times in a row with no response, late at night, begging her to respond. He was like 14 at the time. And always home alone and mentally ill and terrified and lonely and needed a parent. And he sure didn't have one. Okay. We'll stop talking about it and move on to other things. But again, these are the kind of cases that we have to talk about and think about. All right. I thought that we should open up today with some drumming. Yeah, I think we'll start with it. And here's why. Because we're talking today about getting some of your own inner sass going. I think now that we have made it through the year of January, it's time for us to shake off the dust and start getting ourselves back. And everybody needs a whole lot of sass right now to get right through it. So my article this week is about working with Morgan Le Fay to pull out your own inner sassiness. But I wanted to drum first to empower you. So I'm going to do two things. I'm going to drum first for a couple of minutes to just shake off the dust. So then the cobwebs. So in the first drumming, all you have to do is focus on the tones of the drum, the frequency, the vibration of the drum, and just hold space that you're going to allow anything that you're carrying that's no longer serving you to fall off. Okay. All right, stage one. I forgot to tell you, and if you've not listened to drumming before, you might have experienced this. Some people have fight or flight when you hear the drum. I actually do. And I'm the one playing it. But I know a lot of you guys do too. It's an interesting sensation for me. And I had it there about halfway through that drumming. It is the sense that maybe you should just run away or turn it off or get away. It's because it's penetrating. It's getting in. It is doing its work. Try to breathe through the flight if you can and stay and just keep breathing and know that you're safe. It's an interesting phenomena. I think it means that the drum is doing its work. And about halfway through there, I had a huge rush of anxiety pass through my chest, and I remembered that feeling and went, oh yeah, there it is. It was a great release, but sometimes that's a little disconcerting. All right, so I'm going to drum again. This time, I want you to allow that the frequency of the drum to permeate your solar plexus, balancing it, empowering it, and expanding it, filling up with bright yellow light, surrounding you with it while I drum.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, that cleared out some stuff for me. I hope it did for you guys as well. Pamela wanted to know if that fight or flight response could be an ancestral response. Certainly it could. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. Sid said she was moved to do somatic therapy to shake out her hands and arms and stomp her feet. She said, I didn't feel anxious, but similar to when there's a beat or rhythm in your space and your body is prompted to respond. Yeah. Oh, I like that. Any of that movement is helping you to move energy. So that makes sense to me, Sid. Nice. Okay. I'm going to hop in the other chat room here real quick. All righty. Okay. I think let's go ahead and take a look at Luminous. I've got several things in there that apply to us today. I'm going to put a link in both chat rooms and then I'll share my screen. I chose a cover today of Morgan Le Fay because we're talking about her and, well, obviously, right? Okay. We stayed home this weekend. Scott has been sick. I don't know what he's had. The flu, maybe COVID. He's been really tired, but no, didn't lose his sense of smell or taste. So that's good. But he has been quite unwell. We should have been in Boise this weekend at a basketball game, but he just wasn't up to it. So we rented pizza. What? We ordered pizza. We watched the second season of Reacher. We watched basketball. We laid around. We pretty much stayed in our jammies for 2 or 3 days, and it was pretty great. But by yesterday, we had had enough of this house and enough of being here, so we had to at least get out for a little while. But I don't think it was RSV. It was more sinus. So yesterday, he felt quite a bit better, but he was just so tired. And today, he seems to be quite a lot better, so... Yeah, I did not get it. So, and all those things. I don't know if it was COVID. He didn't test. He didn't lose taste and smell, and he always has in the past. But that's true. If it's a new variant, maybe you don't with this one. I had COVID in October, and he didn't. So it kind of made me wonder if it was COVID because I didn't get it. And maybe I still have... I'm holding on to some antibodies for dear life. I know, Sherry. I love Reacher, too. And Reacher's hard. Reacher's on Amazon. If you don't do violent shows, you will hate this show. But we loved it. Season 1 and Season 2. Yeah. Yeah. So I had said last week that some prayers for Scott's family would be appreciated, and I didn't really share more because I didn't know what else to say yet. About 10 days ago, we received a call about 6 o'clock in the morning on a Friday from Scott's sister. She was hysterical, and she had just had a knock on the door from some police officers to let them know that their younger brother, Scott's brother Todd, had been found deceased. And they were looking for his next of kin. Scott's mom is, they live in a fifth wheel. And so they travel around in the wintertime. They're not here. So they couldn't locate her. They said it was a suspicious death. And they were investigating. And that's all we knew for a time. And then we learned more and more. And now we think we have a better part of the picture. There's still some questions that we don't have answered. But we're waiting on some things. Scott has been estranged from his brother for about 15 years. And the reason why is because of addiction and just him being a very unsafe person. And about 15 years ago, we decided that we needed to choose our children and keep them safe from this person, from this lifestyle, from the never-ending stream of lies and theft from us, and just all of it. And unfortunately, we could not. He was one of those people that if you opened the door a crack to help them a little bit, you might as well give him your debit card because you're done. He would take absolutely anything he could get. He would lie to your face without hesitation, without any guilt whatsoever. He actually had a diagnosis of antisocial personality disorder, which essentially is a lack of conscience. So we are sad for who he could have been. As a little boy, remember I started dating Scott when we were 14. So I've known his siblings since they were young kids. And as a little boy, Todd had a lot of promise. He was super smart and he was an excellent athlete. Everything came easy to him. But he also had some psychological issues that went completely unaddressed. And he suffered quite a bit of abuse at the hands of his mom. And so it's been an interesting dynamic for us this last 10 days because we are no contact with mom and have been with Scott's mom. We have been for more than 10 years, 12 years, about 12 years. And we've been no contact with Todd for longer than that for our own sanity and for the safety of our kids. And so, yeah, it's been an interesting thing trying to support his dad and sisters through this because, of course, it's a blow. It doesn't matter what, you know, it's been like. It's still a blow. And it's the true crimer in me has been digging or wanting to dig and get actual answers because the answers have been, well, they haven't really been much of answers. From what we can gather right now, it sounds like they think it was probably a fentanyl OD. And they are tracking down some people that he had been with. It seems like his car is missing. And it seems as though perhaps there has been a... Maybe they're trying to find the source of the drug. There have been several fentanyl ODs in Idaho Falls here in the last little while, so we think that's essentially what's happening. Typically, from my own experience in true crime and other family members, unfortunately, when a felon that has given the police a lot of headaches die, a lot of times there's not very much investigation into it. Right or wrong, that just tends to be the case. And so that's kind of what we've seen in this case, is that there just has not been... I hope that they keep digging. I mean, I think that... there's been toxicology and whatnot. We're just waiting for results on a lot of things. But I hope they keep digging because we need to take care of our communities. And I think that his family deserves to know what happened. But at any rate... So yeah, last week I had asked for some good vibes and didn't share more, but that's what happened and what has been happening. There's not going to be a service right now, maybe a celebration of life later on. This has stirred up some pretty wild family drama that has now finally settled back down. So, and we're always on the outside looking in because we don't want to play. And so for our sanity, we've just been standing over here trying to... shut the hell up. But at any rate, so I appreciate you guys and all of your love and support always. Yeah. Oh, Tara said, my brother too, commenting here because my mom can see my chats on Facebook. My poor sister is at her wit's end. My parents want to take care of him, but it's gone far too far for too long. No, I get that totally, Tara. I do. And I do, and love to your family. We've waited for this call for a long time because we figured at some point it was unfortunately probably coming. Yep. Oh, Tara said they all live in the same household and nothing is changing anytime soon. He was hospitalized with an OD a couple of years ago and nothing has even changed. It's such a hard thing to see. Oh, gosh. Tara, do they have some Narcan on hand? If they don't have Narcan, you can buy it at the pharmacy. You can even sometimes get it for free. I'm not sure how they do it in Canada, but they should really have some Narcan in the house for that reason. So Narcan is a drug that basically floods your system with adrenaline and overcomes opioid overdoses. So it's something that, because of the fentanyl crisis we're having, is something that a lot of people have on hand just because. Yeah. Wild. A lot going on. All right. Well, let's go back to Luminous. So again, I called this magazine the Super Sass Edition because it's time to get your inner sass out of the box. If you've been keeping her under a rock, it's time to let her out. We all need it. We got to stand up for ourselves. We got to stand up for our world. We are needed, ladies and gentlemen. We are needed. The call is coming. All right. So my article is Unleashing Your Inner Sorceress, Embracing Morgan Le Fay's Strength and Sass. So who's Morgan Le Fay? Well, it depends on who you talk to. She's not a damsel in distress. She's not a virtuous queen. She's considered to be a goddess. And she's a beast. She's a sorceress. She was known in Merlin's time, depending on, again, on who you talk to, as a devil-worshipping witch, or just a witch, or somebody who didn't put up with shit. And that's who I believe her to be. Somebody who's just not putting up with it. So, it is my presumption that we should all maybe strive to be a little bit more like Morgan here and there. So, how do you do it? Embrace your independence. Morgan Le Fay is the epitome of independence. She doesn't wait around for a knight in shining armor to rescue her. She takes matters into her own hands. Follow her lead and embrace your own autonomy. Don't be afraid to pursue your goals with determination and self-reliance, whether it's your career, relationships, or personal endeavors. Stand tall and assert your independence like the fierce sorceress you are. Hells yes. When I was thinking about the magazine this week and what theme I wanted to embrace and what I wanted to call it, the words that came through to me were Tawanda. Are you familiar? I've talked about it here on the show before, but you might not know. But maybe you do know. That's a phrase from Fried Green Tomatoes. And this is when the heroine of the story is, crashing over and over again into the car of the rude teenage brats in the parking lot at the grocery store. The Piggly Wiggly, I'm pretty sure. Yelling, Tawanda! This was her empowerment phrase. And ever since I watched that movie when I was a kid, Tawanda has been a phrase. If you're going to open up a can of Tawanda, somebody is effed. That's what I know. Own your own magic. Morgan Le Fay is renowned for her mastery of magic, using spells and enchantments to shape the world around her. While you might not have a cauldron bubbling with potions, you possess your own unique brand of magic. Hear this. Your talents, skills, and intuition. Embrace your inner witch, metaphorically speaking or not, and your own magic. Whether you're a gifted artist, talented communicator, or an intuitive healer, let your magic shine brightly for all to see. I think it's really, really important to hear that you are exactly who you are supposed to be. Your energy matters, your influence matters, your actions matter. And I think it's very, very important because people have the nerve to look me in the face sometimes and say that they don't think that they have any gifts or that they are not talented or that they don't feel like what they do makes any difference in this world. And I will call bullshit on that every time because it's just not true. You do matter and what you are doing matters. The problem that we have is that we are so saturated in media, and for a very long time, there was such an energy of perfection, right? This really started in what, the 60s with Twiggy? Such a phenomena of perfection that you had to look a certain way, you had to be a certain shape, you had to speak a certain way, your hair had to be worn a certain way. Everything had to be perfect. Now, I think it's an interesting thing that with the advent of YouTube and TikTok and other social media platforms where you're not just showing a staged picture and telling a stage story about what you're showing, but you're showing more of you. That we're getting away from that sense of perfection. I mean, it's slow. You know, the media still would like to see us there. Advertisers want to see us there because when you let your freak flag fly, you're a lot less likely to buy their stuff. But we're getting there more and more all the time. So don't compare yourself to someone else. Compare yourself to you. Because however you're doing things is right for you. And that is worth honoring. Okay, embody confidence. Confidence oozes from every pore of Morgan Le Fay's being. She knows her worth and she isn't afraid to flaunt it. Channel her confidence by standing tall, speaking your truth, and owning your space. Don't shrink yourself to fit into society's narrow expectations. Embrace your quirks, flaws, and eccentricities with pride. After all, it's your uniqueness that makes you truly magical. I think I already pretty much just spoke on that. But for real, though, just be you. That's good enough. That's exactly what you're supposed to be. Embrace your wild side. For some of you, this is a lot easier than others. Some of you were raised in families, in societies, in cultures, where that really wasn't allowed. Some of you weren't. Some of you were allowed to, you know, be wild and crazy. Some of you had parents that were too. So it's easier for you, but embrace your wild side. Morgan Le Fay is often depicted as a wild, untamed spirit, dancing on the edges of conventionality. Embrace your own wild side by tapping into your primal instincts and passions. Whether it's dancing under the moonlight, communicating with nature, or indulging in a little harmless mischief, let your inner wildling run free. Life's too short to play by society's rules. Embrace your wildness and revel in the freedom it brings. I think for women, this is best described in purity culture. That a woman who is sexually free and more promiscuous is called what? A whore? A slut? A trollop? Lots of other things? What do we call men that are sexually free? There isn't even a term for them. No. We've made them up. We say like man whore, you know, or he slut or something maybe, but we don't put those terms on men the way we put those on women. Women who allow themselves to dress however they choose. Women who have sex with who and when they choose to. Women who swear. That is still a thing, believe it or not. Women who speak up and have a voice and don't mollycoddle people around them. Well, they're the ones that get shamed. We've gotten further and further away from that, and we continue to move away from that. But boy, we have some double standards there that we have to continue to blow out of the water. Yeah, we call men studs, right? We actually give men credit for having lots of partners, whereas we tear women down for the same stuff. Wild. Forge your own path. Morgan Le Fay is a trailblazer, forging her own path in a world dominated by men. Weird, what? Follow her lead and dare to defy expectations. Don't be afraid to march to the beat of your own drum, even if it means going against the grain. Trust your instincts, follow your heart, and chart a course that's uniquely yours. Remember, the most magical journeys are the ones that veer off of the beaten path. Love it. I did an experiment one time in the grocery store. It was based on something I had heard someone else say, that women defer to men in ways that they don't realize. So the experiment was to walk through the grocery store and not get out of men's way. Push your buggy right through that store and don't veer out of men's way or anyone else's. Claim your space. I was shocked. Wherever men were standing, whatever they were looking at, whatever they were doing. They weren't moving for women or anybody else. They were standing their ground, doing their thing. It wasn't openly aggressive in any way, of course. But what it was women skating around the men. Don't believe me? Go do your own experiment. And also, stand your ground and don't move. And see what happens. Very interesting. The other one I was challenged to pay attention to was when you are in a group, and I'm not bagging on men per se. This is just the way our culture has been. And this is an interesting one. I've noticed this with many men around me who I don't consider to be misogynists or anything of the like, quite the opposite. But when two women are having a conversation and a man walks up to them, they will stop talking and bring him into the conversation as a rule. When a woman walks up to a couple of men talking, they will just keep talking. They don't stop and defer to her. They don't stop and draw her into the conversation. They expect her to stand there and wait until they're done talking or to insert herself into the conversation, maybe, but there's no deference to her. I have witnessed that many, many times. Now, are these harmful things? Maybe, maybe not. Depends on what industry you're in, what situation you're in. They're just observations, but it is still observations of the world that we live in. Even here in the year of our Lord 2024, we are still experiencing this. It is very interesting. Find strength in vulnerability. Beneath Morgan Le Fay's steely exterior lies a vulnerability that adds depth to her character. Embrace your own vulnerability as a source of strength, not weakness. Allow yourself to feel deeply, love fiercely, and embrace the full spectrum of human emotion. True strength isn't about being invincible. It's about having the courage to be vulnerable and authentic in a world that often demands conformity. Yes, to all of that. So there you go. So my challenge to you is to consider who Morgan Le Fay was. Maybe sit in some meditation time and connect to her. And also, toughen up. Be a little more like Morgan. We need t-shirts. Yeah. Let's see. WWMLFD. Oh, that would be interesting. MLFD. What would Morgan Le Fay do? Okay. That's fine. If that was sacrilegious to some of you, I apologize. Okay. Kelly says, new moon in Aquarius, time to get out of the box. We are, Kel, we're trying. I promise. Morgan's helping us. She said, hey, bitches, you know what's fascinating to me about astrology? No matter where I look, there are synchronicities. The peak event this week is the new moon in Aquarius, and most of the other aspects and transits are also echoing similar energy. It's wild, so let's look at it. I highly recommend that you read up on the rest of what she has to say about the week and that you join her Patreon so that you can read her full scopes every week, because they are very worth it and they're an amazing guide to your week ahead. So if you're interested in her Patreon, just go over to patreon.com/houseofbleep. That is her house over there, or her Patreon, and you can join it for a few dollars a month and be able to access all of the stuff she's doing. So Kelly, good job. And I'll tell you something, and I've talked about her Patreon a lot, and I'll continue to talk about her Patreon a lot, because when Kelly was considering doing a Patreon, we had discussed it. Because she's putting many hours. I don't want to put a number on it because I don't know, but I'm going to assume she's putting around 20 hours a week-ish, if not more, into the work that she's doing. And she felt like that at some point she needed to start being reimbursed for that in some way. Financial energetic exchanges are really important. It's honoring her work for her, And for those of us that subscribe to her Patreon, it's honoring her expertise and it's helping her to feel like what she's doing is making a difference both for her family and for others. I think it's brilliant. I am so, so here for it. Okay. Alrighty, to comfort your heart and lighten your mood, diffuse a blend of rose oil and grapefruit oil. Guys, I'm telling you, if you need a boost, get some grapefruit oil. My gosh. It is such a powerful way to lift your vibe. If you're feeling low and flat and you've got the January blues that followed you all the way into February, I'm telling you, grapefruit and rose, that is a winning combo. Years ago when I had healing hands, a man walked in the door one day, an older gentleman, on a Saturday. And he said, what have you got that'll make me feel better? And I was like, well, I don't know. What are you feeling? He says, just blue, like feeling like shit. What would make me feel better? This guy's not metaphysical at all. He has no idea why he's there. He just came in. I was like, I said, how about an essential oil? And he said, yeah, for sure. Great. Whatever. I just need to feel better. Okay. So I sold him a bottle of grapefruit and visited with him for, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Interesting old guy. Just was very alone in the world and was really feeling crappy. All right, fine. And he mentioned a friend that had actually told him that he should come in and talk to us and see what we had would suggest. Normally, I would have suggested more things. Let's do some energy work. Let's get you in for a massage, maybe. Let's, you know, do some things like that. But he didn't seem to be interested in the metaphysical angle of things at all. He just wanted to feel better. So anyway, I sold him a bottle of grapefruit oil. I told him, just smell it. Just smell it. That's all. I said, you can, if you have a diffuser, you could diffuse it. But if you don't, that's okay. Whatever. He came back in on Tuesday. This was a Saturday. So he came back in on Tuesday. We're closed on Sunday, Mondays. And he said, do you remember me? I said, I sure do. How you doing? And he said, well, I didn't kill myself. And I really paused and I said, that's great. Were you going to kill yourself? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, I was thinking about it. He said, there's no reason for me to still be here. It was very matter of fact, kind of chilling. And he said, but, you know, you were so nice to me and you sold me those oils. And he said, I can't believe how much that helped. He said, as soon as I started smelling that, I didn't want to do that anymore. He said, I'm amazed. So anyway, I just wanted to tell you, I'm still here. Thanks for that. And he left. Never saw him again. but that one grabbed me. So I'm glad it worked. And I'm not telling you that grapefruit will necessarily prevent suicidal ideologies, but in that case, not ideologies, but, you know, suicidal tendencies, but in that case, apparently it did. Okay, then. But it doesn't have to be that intense, just to, you know, shake off the cobwebs, grapefruits. Okay. Christy brings us her Shakti manifesting energy exercise this week. As you know, we are on Verdict Watch with Jennifer. There's a lot of other things, of course, going on in the true crime world. Don't forget to check out Christy's new page, Fidget Whimsy. All you have to do is click on the top. This is a clickable link, and it'll take you right to her Instagram. And she's just rocking it over there, making all kinds of cool stuff and having a ball. Okay, St. Bernadette. Anita brings us St. Bernadette this week because it is her birthday week. Not her birthday week. It's when she started seeing apparitions of the Mother Mary. So this is a fun one to read up on and learn more about, especially if you've never heard of St. Bernadette before. And then Jamie Dawn has a brand new video. How do we express ourselves in our own unique way? Manifesting our hopes and dreams. Awesome. And you've probably noticed that Jamie has returned to radio. And how exciting is that? I also have a bunch of new meditations over at Planet Meditation. I have a brain reboot with binaural beats. I have a guided meditation that I performed to connect to Archangel Ariel for grief. I also have a guided meditation for connecting to Archangel Michael. And then a meditation is just simply for sharing your light and warmth with the world. So lots of good stuff there. So you can check that out. You can click on these, but also you can go to Planet Meditation on YouTube and find all of them there. I've amassed a pretty good little body of work over there. I have more than 100 meditations there now. So some of them are guided, most of them are not. Some of them are just easy listening, and some of them are very specific, like binaural beats or solfeggio tones and things like that. And that's it. So that is Luminous. So hopefully you found a few gems in there that will help you out. That's always the goal. Yeah. Yeah. Lillian said, makes me think of Bud. Oh, of Bud and Buddha. That is 92, about to transition. He told his niece that it was time. Oh. But 92. Sid said, that's a great story about the power of grapefruit oil. Even smelling a grapefruit at Walmart gives me a boost, right? Yeah. I really want to eat grapefruit. I really want to. And I buy it in the, like, the little cups, you know? And then I practically never eat it. I don't know why. I've thrown it away so many times. There's something about it that draws me in. But then the idea of actually eating it, like, I don't think I can do the acid, maybe. but by God, I buy it. Oh, Lordy. Oh, Tara's kids go to a school named after Saint Bernadette. That's cool. Yeah. Sherry does not like grapefruit. Yeah, yeah. For me, it's the pink grapefruit that's already sweetened in the little cups that are cold and juicy. And they really are delicious, but I don't know why. I can't bring myself to eat them after I buy them. So apparently I don't like them either. Hey, Effie, it's so good to see you. Maybe we could boil it and smell it around the house, right? Just throw it in your diffuser. My diffuser broke. That's one of my goals today, is to get a new diffuser ordered. I mean, it's probably died of an overuse injury, to be fair, but yeah, I did. That's true, Sid. It probably has a bunch of preservatives in it. That's probably true. I could buy a whole grapefruit. When I was a kid, my mom did that a lot. Put a little sugar on it and just, like, eat it with a spoon right out of the grapefruit. Yeah. Yeah, so did we, Tiff, just like that. Uh-huh. Oh, gosh, you guys, this show has gone so fast. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you guys more than I can say. I hope that you have a great week. Again, get your Tuwanda on, please, or your Morgan Le Fay. Be a little bit more sassy than normal, or just the right amount of sass, whatever that is for you. That's true. Be careful with grapefruit with certain medications. It can be reactive. That's a really good point. Thank you for that. Yeah. Well, I will be back next week. Same place, same time. You guys know the drill. Yes. Tuwanda. This has been yet another production of the Katie Weaver Show here on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way you listen to the world.